Hello, everyone. I'm Doug, and I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, my sobriety date is July 8th of 2003. That wasn't my first sobriety. My first sobriety happened, well, I guess the first introduction to AA happened when I was a student at Menlo College up in Atherton, got arrested for a DUI at 18. So I went to an AA meeting and heard a woman say, "I only had one glass of wine with lunch. I don't know why I'm here." And I was like, that's what I heard, you know? So I was introduced again later on when I had another DUI. And this time I had alcohol education classes, and they said things like, if you're here on a DUI for the first time, more than 50% of you will be back again. And out of that group, it's a higher recidivism rate. And I thought, man, $10,000 to, you know, 7 years probation and all this loss of my license. I don't want to come back again. So I went to an AA meeting, and there was a kite shop downstairs. So I learned how to fly Indonesian and Korean fighter kites. You know, I didn't quite make it in. But then I had one of those toxic relationships after 10 years, you know, the kind, meth, alcohol, weed, a job where we had shit delivered into the warehouse in Long Beach. And I left Long Beach and that relationship and drove cross country to enter an outpatient rehab and smoked, drank, and snorted my way to Indianapolis, where my mother had moved. And I got sober, and I got a counselor, I went to therapy, and I went to AA, and stayed sober 3 years, going to meetings. And then I was skiing in Lake Tahoe, and somebody whispered in my ear, they actually said this, "You're the least alcoholic person I know, have a glass of wine with us." And I thought, sounds good. I did, and I hope we're going to do it later. And I did. And then I got a habit. My habit came back. And I drank for 3 more years. Started like this. That one glass of wine gave me a slight headache. I thought, what was the point of that? And then the next weekend, I thought, I'm normal now, so I can drink regularly. So I'll just have a couple beers. Waited for the sky to fall. Bummed a cigarette off the roommate. He gave me such attitude that I realized I don't want to bum a cigarette and be shamed about it. So I bought a pack of cigarettes. Yeah. So I bought a six pack along with a pack of cigarettes, put them in the fridge because now I can drink normally, right? Because I had 3 years of education in AA. Yeah. And never got a sponsor, never put pen to paper, but I went through a year-long step study, call it auditing the class. And so those beers and that cigarette got in me. And then the next thing you know, I need to eat because I like that combination of things, alcohol, weed, cigarettes, and sex. And as long as all that's working, I'm still crossing my fingers and hoping for the best, right? Love, right? And so 3 years of a run, I was back in a place that was so familiar, the empty despair of an alcoholic. Alone, having burned bridges, a remote control, an ashtray, and a bottle of Tanqueray gin, which was my poison, and a job that I hated. And I would wake up and I'd smoke a joint and I'd make some espresso and I'd smoke that cigarette on top of that weed. And just like they talk about alcohol and sedatives, that was my way to wake up. And then I would go to this job through commuter life in San Diego to the, you know, corporate plaza, and I'd walk, you know, lunch out into the little canyons and smoke my weed and come back and finish out the day until the afternoon when my gin mouth started screaming, "I need a cocktail." And then I'd drive to Triple Bourbon Street, which is my, you know, bar, and I'd like to drink there until people came, but that would bother me, so I'd go home and drink alone because it's better that way. And then just random Monday morning, you know, I woke up and I was like, I'm fucked. I don't know what to do. I don't know how else to live. I don't have any, I'm sick and I don't know what to do. And so I did the first most courageous thing ever in my life, which is to pick up the phone, call my office and say, I'm sick. I can't stop drinking and I don't know what to do. And you know what? When we ask for help, help's provided. And the lady said to me, "Doug, We value you. Here's my home number. Here's my cell phone number. Here's my pager. Here's my office number. You sit tight. I'm going to have someone call. And they called me up and they said, come to the ER. So I got good and high and dressed up in an outfit. Yeah. I gotta have a drama. Yeah. I got a cab, rolled on into the ER. And the South African woman, doctor at Kaiser Permanente, looked me up and down, did blood work, and said, if you think you're an alcoholic, go to AA. I'm not admitting you. And I was like, damn. All right. That didn't work. So I called the cab, went home, picked up the phone because I'd already done it once. And the courage was upon me. That didn't work. I need another option. Sit tight. We're going to have someone call you. And they called me and said, come down for an intake interview. And I was like, all right. And then, you know, I wore a cowboy outfit that time. For real. And I stopped at the gift shop and got a huge flower, you know, like, because I'm showing up for whatever I'm showing up for, who knows. But I did my interview and they said, you're in. And I said, well, wait, you know, hold on. I didn't bring anything. I thought I was coming for an interview. And the guy looked at me and said, this is your moment. Are you walking through that door or not? I said, well, buy my car, park it at the end of the lot. You know, he was basically under his breath saying, we're sick of your shit, man. And I was like, called out. And so I did the second most courageous thing ever, which was I walked through the door and my life's changed. And this time out of detox, I went to a meeting instead of the bar and I raised my hand and said, Doug, I'm like 10 minutes out of detox and I need a sponsor. And some guy volunteered. And, you know, it makes me want to cry right now because fucking how powerful is that? A stranger willing to help somebody who was so terrified, because I was terrified. I had lived that way since I was 12 years old. I didn't know how to live without using all day. And I was 38, you know? And so the next problem was no self-esteem, no self-respect, and only had fear. Well, how are you going to make it through a weekend night on that? You know, because they told me, give up your people, places, and things. And mine had burned me. So I was happy to do that. You know, fuck those guys, right? Fuck them, you know? And yet I was alone on a Friday night and like 10 minutes sober and just crawling the fucking walls. And so, you know, I go, Jesus, you're going to have to be my date, you know, because I'm not going to make it. And so I'm going to make a plan for you and me. And we sat down and had dinner together and I didn't drink. So the point of that is to suggest the solution to alcoholism is the relief that comes from power greater than ourselves. That very first day I was reaching for it and I had my own little delusion going on, but I put food on a plate for Jesus and I made it through to the meeting in the morning. And then they taught me about getting a service commitment, right? And the service commitment was how I now was getting less afraid of you and starting to sit down and stay. And then I was a kick bitch, they called it that back in the day. And then I had to light the candles and sit next to Ergo Majors. And Ergo was like a mountain of an ex-Marine who would say this, you're a loving child of a loving God, no matter what you think about it. And I was like, fuck you, man. And then that guy came and spoke at the Gay Alano Club down in San Diego. This huge ass Marie. And I went and gave him a hug. All right, you're in them, right? And then I had to consider, what does it mean to be a loving child of a loving God? Do I have a right to have my own relationship with a power greater than myself that's going to save my life? And I thought, yeah, I exist. I have that right. And so, thanks. We're going to wrap it up. The self-esteem came from doing esteemable acts. And I remember going to my first H&I panel, and nobody else went. And I was like, man, I don't want to go. Nobody else is with me. I don't want to go in there, you know? And I was like, oh, man, damn it, much, you know? That's how I showed up. And then I was like, all right, but I got the books. And so if I don't do it, they're not going to have a meeting. So I went in there. And these people at the Nut House, it was a short-term acute residential treatment facility. They had just tried to kill themselves and now they're being stabilized. Were so profoundly grateful that I showed up, that I learned something about humility. Because when I walked back to my car, I felt clean, whole, innocent. I haven't felt that way since I was nine. And I was like, oh, you know, oh. And I think it was a bit there.
All right. Thank you again.